So the thought was today to talk a little bit about a very mysterious Isser. It's mysterious even though it comes up all the time every day, but the parameters are difficult and complex, and apparently got Gedalia in trouble. So we are fasting today because of Gedalia and the fact that he was assassinated, and of course the larger implications. But the Gemara Maseches Nida seems to hold him responsible for his own death. It seems to criticize him for Kabbalah Lashon Hara, but not in the sense that you'd expect, but rather for a failure to be Mekabel, or a failure at least to listen. We have to figure out exactly what the parameters are. That's a part of it. But that his issue was in the realm of Kabbalah Lashon Hara, and that he was going too far with it, that he was made aware of this plot to assassinate him, and yet he wasn't ready to be Mekabel. And indeed, it was true, and the rest, as they say, is history. So how are we to understand the implications of that Gemara and the nature of the Isser of Kabbalah Lashon Hara, which the truth is in a lot of ways very relevant as a general Isser Simei Tshuva theme, but has this particular extra relevance today, which helps us to put it into some perspective. So first off, tell me some of the difficulties. How do you understand the idea of an Isser of being Mekabel Lashon Hara? What strikes you as something we need to understand about this? It's perhaps a little difficult. Or maybe you find it very simple. Yes, Jonah?
Could this even be in a passive state if you are not willing to hear it, or if it's just told to you, A, without you even realizing what's happening, or B, without even your discretion?
Okay, so that's certainly a major difficulty. Right? How exactly do you relate to something which seems to be passive, and therefore what's your responsibility? It's one thing if we talk about not speaking Lashon Hara, so we presumably have some degree of control over that. We can make a decision not to say something that is Lashon Hara. Clearly it's a lot more challenging than it sounds, but at least it's in the realm of possibility. But when it comes to receiving Lashon Hara, so you could ask the question from two directions. One is, if it's indeed as passive as it sounds, so then how are we responsible for it? Or is that not actually what it is? And maybe the passive type of Kabbalah, what we might see as passive, is actually not Kabbalah Lashon Hara, and maybe it's something more. Natanael?
Could we differentiate between being present when it's being spoken to us and accepting it and believing it?
We definitely could differentiate. And the question is, does that take us far enough? So if you recall, we spoke about this a little bit in Parshas Shir, Parshas Kisetze, because there, I think we had a lot to cram in on that day, but among the many, many themes in that Aliyah was a couple of Lashon Hara references, and including one of the other sources of the Yisr, Nishmarta and the Kol Davara, and also a pasuk that Chazal and Gemara in Ksubis darshaned to mean that if you hear something that you don't want to hear, so then you should cover up your ears. And that presents the question, when we talk about Kabbalah Lashon Hara, does that mean not to listen? Is that the Yisr? Or, like Natanael was saying, is it probably something more? And then you have to figure out, if it is something more, does that mean it's okay to listen? To choose to listen? Or is that Gemara saying that you should stop yourself even from listening? So these are among the questions. What exactly are the parameters? Is it listening? Is it something more than listening? How can we hold you responsible for something that is passive? All of that is difficult, and that's something we need to figure out. In addition, so what exactly is the source for the Isser Kabbalah Lashon Hara? So any perspective on that? How do we know there's an Isser Kabbalah Lashon Hara from the Gemara? It's not just that Gemara Nida, but we have another Gemara that tells us about this, and that connects it to a pasuk. if you had a chance to see. So that's the Gemara in Pesachim. Yedidra, you raise your hand.
Yeah. What did it just be from the pasuk, like the in Kedoshim?
Okay, so that's part of the problem. So tell me what you mean when you say that. When you say it's from the pasuk in Kedoshim.
I mean, that says specifically about, you know, peddling Lashon Hara about saying it, but I assume it'd be like both ways, sort of.
So that's interesting, because that's part of the problem. That's part of the question we're going to try to figure out. So why would you assume that? And it's a logical assumption, but just spell it out. Why would you assume that?
Because every time you talk, then, like, there's two aspects. The person who's talking and the person who's, you know, receiving the words and the talking. So it's like two ways almost. It can't be like one way. You know, the person listening is involved in the peddling of Rechilas, almost.
Okay, that's interesting. I would have thought also that maybe that's what you're getting at, is that presumably the speaker wouldn't speak without an audience, and his action is not complete without an audience. So, therefore, he is a part of the Yisrael. And we know also that we have a general prohibition of Lifnei Ivra Lo Sitei Mishal, that we're not allowed to help with Averos or to participate in Averos. So I would assume that's all a part of what you're saying, that if we know there's an issue of speaking, so then it follows there should also be a problem with being on the receiving end. So I think that's important to point out, that all that is logical, because it creates its own question. Because the Gemara in Pesachim does bring another pasuk in order to make the point. And what you're pointing out, Didja, is correct, and therefore leaves us with the question that why do I need a pasuk? Why isn't it just self-understood? That if Lashon Hara is itself an Avera, and you're not allowed to participate in Averas, and even without Lifnei Ivra as its own concept, but we understand that people who nobody's listening to usually eventually decide to stop talking. So why is it not self-evident that there's a problem with listening to Lashon Hara? So the fact that there is another source is interesting. And then it gets more interesting. Because not just does the Gemara and Pesachim give us a source, but that source is itself interesting. And so that we'll talk about in a second. But also, there's an opinion in the Gemara there that source is actually covering also speaking Lashon Hara. So we mentioned in Kiseitze that there are a lot of candidates for the Isser of Lashon Hara, and that the Pasuk in Vayikra and Kedoshim of L'Seilach Rachel is the most often quoted, but it's not the only candidate. There's a couple of candidates. And that Gemara in Pesachim has an opinion which points to that Pasuk in Mishpatim of L'Sisa Shem Hashav. So that's also very interesting. Because what you're seeing here then is that not only do we need a source for Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and it's not as obvious as we thought it was, but it is itself maybe the source. And maybe we could turn things around, that you would have thought that the Isser is speaking Lashon Hara, and that the person who's listening to Lashon Hara, he's the accessory. He's the one who is enabled. What if it's the other way around? What if the Isser is Kabbalah Lashon Hara, and the one who is speaking, he's the enabler, he's the accessory. He is allowing the listener to violate his Isser. It's a pretty surprising kind of idea. Now we'll add one more surprise to it. So what is this Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that the Gemara points to? What does the pasuk say? Somebody help me out. Lo sisa shema shav. So can anyone translate that pasuk? It's not easy to translate. What does that mean? Lo sisa shema shav. So every word there is a little challenging, except for lo. That lo, that part we could probably understand, but sisa shem hashav. So sisa is a hard word to translate. It kind of goes up and down. That's why they call it that. But it could mean to lift or to support or to carry. So it has that kind of connotation. So when we talk about being makabel, so that may help us give us a clue that makabel doesn't just mean passive receiving, but lifting up, supporting, making something have some power to it. But what does the rest of the pasuk mean? Lo sisa shema shav. So what does shema shav mean? So shema is a report. What is shav?
Shav is usually like some form of false, but not necessarily the same thing as sheker.
Interesting. Okay, expand on that.
Meaning sheker is usually a term that we apply for a direct full-on lie, a complete abandonment of the truth, whereas shav could be more of a twisting of the truth, more of a something that's based in something real, I think.
That's very interesting. I think that actually would have a lot of relevance here, although I don't know if that's supported from outside sources, because I would kind of go in one direction or the other. I think what you're saying is very, very interesting and possibly very useful to us. But just as far as what we would know from other places to try to interpret this, I don't know if either of the indications yet give us that, although we want to explore what you're saying. So first of all, shav in other places, it normally means something that is useless. Right? So we say, lo sisa shem Hashem Elokecha l'shav. So we shouldn't take God's name in vain. So to say God's name for no reason is called shav. Or when it comes to oaths, when it comes to shvuah, so we said kol nidre, we're going to say we did hataras nedar before Rosh Hashanah. So there's a difference between a shvuah shav and a shvuah sheker. So a shvuah sheker would be false, and a shvuah shav would be something that is unnecessary. So if I take a shvuah that the sky is green, so that would be sheker. If I take a shvuah that the sky is blue, so that would be shav, because who needs me to take a shvuah for that purpose? So normally shav means it's something that is a waste. So here, that would be an understandable translation, because a part of what we'll see today, the whole context of Gedalia specifically, is that there is a big distinction between that which is necessary and that which is not necessary. So if the pasuk means don't be mekabel lashon hara when it's useless, so then that would work well. So that's the message to Gedalia, that it wasn't useless in his case. It was a matter of life and death. So don't be mekabel a report that is unnecessary. But if it's life-threatening, then yes, you should be mekabel. So that all would have made a lot of sense. But what's surprising is that if you're doing Shnai Mikra, so you have a few months here, I've been doing Shnai Mikra and Parshat Mishpatim. So when you do the two basic sources there on the page, Unklus and Rashi, so both of them translate shav there as sheker, which is surprising on a bunch of levels. So first of all, because that's not the usual translation of shav. But it's also surprising for a different reason. Now, what else is surprising about that? That if the pasuk is telling us the way Chazal are understanding, that's a prohibition not to accept Lashon Hara, and it translates in English to do not accept the false report. So what's interesting about that?
Don't we usually say Lashon Hara is true?
Okay, so we usually say lots of Lashon Hara. But we usually are taught that the distinction between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is that Motzi Shemra is false and slanderous, and Lashon Hara is actually true. So if that's the case, if Lashon Hara does mean something that's true, so then it seems surprising that the pasuk that tells us not to accept it is translated by the major sources, Unklus and Rashi, as saying, don't accept a false report. So all of these things are interesting, and just to add a little bit more to the mix, So the idea that Kabbalah slash Lashon Hara is up there with speaking Lashon Hara maybe is the controlling source, according to at least one opinion in the Gemara, and seems to be at least equated with speaking Lashon Hara, is all surprising. And the Gemara in Maseches Erechin tells us that Lashon Hara was called Tlisoi, it was called the three-part Isser, the three-part Avera, because in the language of the Gemara, sorry, it kills three. It kills the subject, we get that, he's the major victim. It kills the speaker, okay, it gets him in trouble, let's translate it like that for a second. And also the recipient. So there's three parties. The subject, the speaker, and the mekabel. So that's already interesting, putting them all on the same plane. But the language of the Rambam is most surprising. I know I gave it right before we started shiur, but I didn't get a chance to quickly look at that Rambam I sent it up. So he has the most surprising formulation. That the Rambam's language is the hamekabel yoser min haomra. And apparently, the mekabel is not just equal to the speaker, it's an even bigger problem, which certainly seems very surprising. Right? You would start off thinking, right, to start off with Yid's point, you would have thought that this is basically an understandable accessory kind of thing. The guy speaking Lashon Hara is really doing the Avera, and the mekabel is helping him. And here we see the possibility that not only is he not just some obvious helper to the speaker, but maybe he is equal, gets his own pasuk, and maybe that's where it all comes from, and maybe he's worse. So where does all of that come from? What is that meant to convey to us?
Is it possible that because he has his own pasuk and it's the Lifnei, so you have, because you have Lifnei Iver, because both those, then you kind of have two issues, and then you...
It is possible, but it makes things very technical, right? It is true, and sometimes you find that you add up the number of prohibitions, so then it comes out to more. But it still sounds funny, right? So to say that just because we're counting up Yisurim, that makes you worse, because we generally have a rule, we say, Shelo Yehei Tafel Chamer Min Ha'ikar, that which is secondary is generally not going to be worse than that which is primary. So it seems very hard to say that Reuven's doing an Aveira and Shimon is helping him, and Shimon is somehow worse than Reuven.
Unless Shimon is also doing an Aveira, though.
Right. But to say that his Aveira is worse than Reuven's, if he's just helping Reuven...
Well, what if Shimon has his own Isra in and of itself? Just because if the listening is its own Isra in and of itself, and he's just as culpable as the speaker, then that plus Lifnei Iver might in turn make a greater Avera. Because
it is true if you take a very technical approach of just counting up prohibitions, so then maybe you can make a case that adds up to more, but it's still
the speaker is also in violation of Lifnei Iver anyways.
Sorry?
The speaker would then also be in violation of Lifnei Iver.
Right, it's true. They would also be in a circle. Right? So then that would maybe even have a point also. So you start with a technical question, you get a technical answer.
So I guess my other answer is that whenever you're a speaker, I guess you have, I don't want to say, it's because your motivation is like specific, I guess. Like maybe like you want to vent about some writer, you specifically want to talk about that person. So like, it doesn't justify what you do, but at least gives more kind of like reasoning for what you're doing, versus the listener will have less of a is the one who like doesn't have a reason, isn't venting. They're when they're listening to it, they have less motives or less you know, they have less reason to do it besides this or in and of itself.
Maybe. That's an interesting factor. That's definitely something to think about. You know, is there some kind of difference as far as the motivation or the justification, and how much does that play a role? So that's all very interesting, and that may also be a part of the answer. So the truth is, there's always so much Lashon Hara to say. There's a ton to say about this. We'll try to say it in a relatively brief form to let everybody get to Mincha. But there are a couple of points we could suggest to kind of make this all make sense. So first of all, let's kind of work from the middle. So the idea that Lashon Hara is true and Motzi Shemra is false, so we think that's a little bit of an overstated distinction. It's based on the language of the Rambam. It's not something that's ever clearly stated in the Gemara. It's based on the language of the Rambam, and the Chofetz Chaim continues that language. So it certainly is a very prominent distinction. But I think even if you accept that distinction, that's not really what the Rambam and the Chofetz Chaim mean. They don't mean to say that Lashon Hara is complete truth, but rather that there's a difference between Motzi Shemra being complete falsehood, being something that's just made up, a total fabrication, and Lashon Hara, which maybe isn't completely made up out of nowhere, but isn't actually true either. See, it might be more rooted in facts, but that doesn't mean that it's actually conveying truth. Why would it not be truthful, even if it has facts as a basis? Well, it could be subjective. It could be someone's opinion. It could be an exaggeration. It could be out of context. It could be disproportionate. So all of that is very important to understand, because I think it contributes to helping us appreciate why there's an Issur Lashon Hara in the first place. Because if you translate Lashon Hara as true in the literal sense, meaning it really is totally true, so then it becomes very hard for people to relate to why there's an Issur in the first place. Now, why is it that the Torah prohibits us from saying something which is true? And it makes Kabbalah's Lashon Hara even harder to understand. Because let's say we want to translate Kabbalah's Lashon Hara as believing. So you're going to tell me that I should not believe something that is true? It's hard enough to understand why I can't say something that is true. But somebody else is saying it, and I know him to be correct, so I should lie to myself? I should deny something I know to be true? Willful ignorance? So it's important to appreciate that Lashon Hara is not actually true in the full sense. It does not paint an accurate picture. It may have some roots in truth, but the picture that is painted is not a correct picture. And it's noteworthy that Rabbeinu Yonah, the way he interprets the pasuk, is that in the translation he essentially puts in an extra word, saying that you should not believe a report that is possibly untrue. Which is a compelling interpretation, because if you know something to not be true, so why would we have to tell you not to accept it? Don't accept things that you know are false. So presumably nobody's going to choose to accept something that he knows isn't true. So what's easier to appreciate is maybe it means don't accept something as true when it may not be true. So don't rush to accept something conclusively when there's a possibility that it might not be true. Which perhaps works better for the Netanel's translation before of Shav, of something that's somewhere in between truth and sheker, and maybe some kind of a suffix sheker. So if you don't know it to be true, don't accept it as true prematurely. So that is something which is much more relatable, because we do know that very often somebody will tell us something, and it's easier not to expend the mental energy to try to think about whether maybe it may not be true, but just assume that it's the case. So that perhaps is a trap we can easily fall into. So to be told to reserve judgment until you know something is true, that's something that's easier to understand. But also, if we relate to it here as that Lashon Hara itself isn't really true in the full sense, but it creates a false picture, even using facts, but it paints a picture that is not accurate or not complete or not fair or just, so then that also actually works well with the interpretation of the pasuk, because it means that the speaker could be saying something roughly factual, roughly true, But by the time it reaches the ears of the listener, it could be sheker in terms of the interpretation that the listener is going to put on it. And that also could help us to understand the Rambam. That if we look at Lashon Hara as something which starts off true but has so much falsehood in its application that it's essentially a false picture, and that's what the Isser comes from. So that's already true on the level of the speaker. And there's a lot to say about this, but it has to do with the fact that very often things that we think are true are only a part of the picture, and that we have all kinds of cognitive biases and human weaknesses that get in the way of our actually appreciating the whole picture of something. So often we could say something, we might think it's true, but in practice it's actually not really the full truth. So that's bad enough as far as the speaker is concerned. But the listener, who's not really putting in the effort to pay so much attention and to get all the details, he's getting an even more false picture. So perhaps the nature of this Isser is that you maintain an unfair belief about someone else that's not really justified by the facts. And that's what we call Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. And it's even worse for the listener than the speaker, because the speaker has some connection to the truth, but by the time it reaches the ears of the listener, it's farther away from that. And psychologists have documented something called the teller-listener effect, where they note that even when the teller is saying something with a certain degree of accuracy, but the listener tends to get much less out of it than was originally there. And they use words like sharpening and leveling, which means sharpening is a certain major details that are juicy are going to get more intensity in the way you process the story than they necessarily deserve. And leveling is about getting rid of all the bumps in the story so that you're not really focusing on that and all the nuances and everything that may give more context to the picture. And I think we probably could all relate to this. Somebody's telling you something and you don't necessarily have the patience for all the details. Okay, I get it. You're telling me he did something pretty bad. Yeah, it sounds pretty bad. I hear that, right? You're not necessarily focusing on the nuance of the accuracy, even if the speaker is trying to convey any, which would itself be an accomplishment. But the listener is very likely missing all that. So what the Gemara is telling us in Psachim is that L'sisa she'mashav, it means to maintain an unfair opinion about someone, is itself an avera. And maybe even it's the Iker Avera, so maybe it switches everything around, that maybe the Isser of Lashon Hara in speaking is that you are enabling someone to have, or you're making it likely for someone to have an unfair impression about someone. And that's how you are the active party, and the speaker is actually the accessory. The listener is the active party, and the speaker is the accessory, and that's the nature of the Isser, and that's where the Sheker really is, and maybe that's what the Rambam means when he says, "Bamakablo Yoser min ha'omro." Which, if you look at his language specifically, which is also part of why I wanted to send it out before, so you can see his language inside, that he doesn't necessarily say that the receiver is doing a bigger avera than the speaker. He's talking about the damage, and that the damage that goes in all kinds of different directions, and the damage to the listener is even greater than that to the speaker. So if we're talking about the fact that he's further disconnected from the truth, so then maybe we could understand why there is a greater emphasis even on the listener than the speaker. Now, Magen Avraham, you can look this up, Magen Avraham in Kufnun Vav, in Aruch Chaim, he brings all the halachos that aren't elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch, and there the Magen Avraham, he reformulates it as it's a bigger avera to be mekabel than to speak. But maybe in the language of the Rambam, which I think is the source, it means that it's just a bigger problem that you're more detached from the facts when you're the listener than the speaker. And that's why we say Makabel Yoser Min Ha'omer. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? Everybody Makabel? Just kidding. So everybody, so what does it mean to be Makabel? Let's now talk about that for a second. So is the Isser in just listening, or is it something more? So as we mentioned in Kiseitse, it seems like there is some problem with listening. But that problem may be an Isser Drabanan, maybe that's Rasha, certainly not the Pashup Shat in the Pasuk. Or even as the Chafetz Chaim considers, even if it's Daraisa, it's probably not the Isser of Kabbalah Lashon Hara. Kabbalah Lashon Hara is something more. So what is Kabbalah Lashon Hara? Now, it's also noteworthy, especially the Chafetz Chaim points to this in an interesting way, that if you saw, so the Gemara in Pesachim points to this pasuk of Tis Hashem Hashav. The Gemara also tells us elsewhere that there is a different but related Isser connected to the same pasuk. That if you have ex parte communications in a Din Torah, meaning if a dayan would listen to one litigant, not in the presence of the other litigant. So that would be a violation of, says the Gemara, L'sisa Shema Shav. So there, it's a little bit of a different focus. That for the dying to listen to one party without the other party there to object or to correct, so that's going to lead to a false testimony. And that's an aspect of Sheker. So there as well, Shav could go both ways. Shav could mean useless. There's no point in a dying listening to all this negativity if it's not even going to be valid for testimony because the other party's not there. But also, it's fake. It's going to be false because he's going to be able to say something not true without fear of correction. Or even of modification, meaning he may think that he's giving you the whole story, but if the other party was there, he'd round it out. So there, the Isser is listening. But we can understand why it would be different, that the Dayan has a greater responsibility of pure objectivity. So therefore, he's not allowed to listen to something, even if it's just about that, not going any further, because that's going to get in the way of him being able to actually be objective. But you might say that for the average person, so it's not just about listening. We might be in a different position. We have a lower threshold of objectivity we need to have if we're not functioning as a dayan. But if we're makabel, that's the problem. So what does it mean to be makabel? So here you find that there's a major machlokas, that the Chafetz Chaim writes that to be makabel means to believe. If you believe it to be true, that's kabbal. And that is itself also interesting, because that seems also to be somewhat involuntary. If somebody is telling you something and you trust the person, so then you're going to believe them. So some, such as Rav Moshe Sternberg and a few others, they argued that Kabbalah can't just be about believing, because that's also involuntary. And therefore, it must be about something more than that. It must be about acting on it. So if you hear something and you believe it, but you don't act on it, so then that's not going to be Kabbalah Lashon Hara. So here, the Gemara, as we saw regarding Gedaliah, so the Gemara tells us part of what is used to figure out what it means, because the Gemara has this language here that Gedaliah indeed was right not to be makabel lashon hara, but hai lishne bishta, says the Gemara, this lashon hara af al pi lekabulei lo miboy, even though you're not supposed to be makabel lo mechish miboy, you should have been choshish to it. He should have factored it in. He should have taken steps to protect himself. So if you got a chance to see, is a Rashi there, and a Tosfos, there's different interpretations among the Rishonim as to what these words mean. But essentially, it sets up the structure that we need to take into account the various possibilities here. So to fully accept something is true that we don't know is true, so that we're not allowed to do. But if the item is dangerous, if what we're being told is relevant to our self-protection and the protection of others, so then we have to take the steps to protect others and or to protect ourselves and work as if it's true. Didja, you have a question?
Would it make a difference if it was something like Pikach Nefesh related? Because I feel like that, like even the small shemets of something Pikach Nefesh related, then you definitely do have to take it to account.
Sure it would, but it doesn't even have to go that far. So we talk about Lo Samad Al Dam Riacha, which is the other half of the pasuk of Lo Seilach Riacha B'Yamecha. So we're not allowed to stand idly by when somebody is in danger. And the literal reading of the pasuk, it sounds like that's Pikuach Nefesh Al Dam Riacha, but the way the Rambam formulates it in Sefer HaMitzvos is that it means any kind of potential harm of any degree. So if you're able to stop somebody from getting hurt spiritually, physically, materially, in any way, so then you're obligated to do that. So certainly it goes up with a greater danger. So if it's actual Pikuach Nefesh, so then certainly the responsibility goes even more. But even less than that, we're also justified. But what you see here, and I'm going to speak quickly because I want to let you get to Mincha, but you see here there's a very delicate balance that we need to be able to preserve our skepticism in case what's being said is not true. But we also need to protect ourselves and protect others. So what you have here is a very delicate balance, and the Chafetz Chaim himself made it even more nuanced. And the way the Chafetz Chaim formulates it is that if you hear something l'toeles, so then you have to act to protect yourself or others. But you shouldn't believe it, not even as a suffix. So the Chazon Ish was quoted as being very upset about this. I don't understand what that means. It says, Ein ze ela lumdus. That's not a practical distinction. That's only some kind of theoretical lumdus. What does that mean? Not even as a suffix. If you don't know if it's true, that is a suffix. So it seems like the Chafetz Chaim was really walking a very careful tightrope, which seems to us to be very daunting, but it's theoretically possible if you think about it. That he's saying as far as protection, so you have to be very assertive about that, very aggressive to take protective measures, as if the danger is fully there. But as far as believing something that hasn't been established to be true, so then you have to preserve that possibility and not even stigmatize the individual with the status of suffering. So that's a very delicate balance, but you think about it as being machmer on both sides, that as far as the sakana, as far as a danger to anyone, so you have to be very careful to protect, and you have to take steps to make sure that it's not going to be a danger. And we see that one of the lessons of today is that Gedalia wasn't careful enough, and that he allowed himself to be assassinated because he wasn't even a choshesh, and that's what the Gemara is telling us. But at the same time, to also recognize that a report may not be true, so as far as stigmatizing the individual any more than is necessary, so that it's possible to do also, to be careful about that. And to give a muscle, let's say you were going to go into business with somebody. You're going to invest your whole life savings with somebody. And I were to tell you, oh, that guy, he has that name. I heard something about somebody with that name. I'm not sure if it's him. There might be a few other people that name, but if it's that guy, he's a total goner. He's going to steal all your money. So let's say there's three people with his name. So it's a 1 in 3 chance he's the guy who's a goner. So would you invest with him your whole life savings? Presumably not, right? A 1 in 3 chance you're going to lose everything is too high. But if I were to ask you right now, tell me quick, is he the guy or not? There's a 1 in 3 chance he's the guy. You think he is the guy, what would you say? Well, he probably isn't, right? 2/3 chance it's a rogue that he isn't. So both those thoughts can coexist. You can preserve his cheskas kashrus, that he's probably not the guy, but you also wouldn't invest with him because you can't take a 1/3 risk of losing everything. So it's possible to have both those thoughts at the same time. And I think that's a big part of what the Chafetz Chaim is saying, And a big part also of the message for Gedalia here, that even if he wasn't going to accept it, is fully true. But as far as taking steps to protect yourself or others, you still have to act very responsibly. Now, there's much, much, much more to say about this, but I don't want to stop you from going to Mincha. Zambi, is a quick question? Okay, so maybe we can, maybe we'll make some more time tomorrow with the Parsha Shir. We'll make some more time to add a little bit more about this. What I'll leave you for today is Yudavin and Son Gedalia, is to recognize also that Kabbalah Slash and Hara requires, that avoiding Kabbalah Slash and Hara requires that you take into account the context and the whole story, and is anything subjective, and is anything part of a larger picture that's not being seen. So as we daven during the Aser Sumei Tshuva, this is a part of what we're trying to say as well, that we recognize that whatever has been said about us may not be the full picture, and whatever could be lodged against us needs to be seen in a fuller context. And we have a tradition, the Gemara tells us, that the generosity of judgment that we extend to others, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will extend to us as well. So a special zchus during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva is to be very careful about appreciating the context and the full picture and judging others. So that side of the Issur Kabbalah Lashon Hara is something we have to be especially careful about during the Aser Yemei Tshuva, as we look for the same treatment, but also to recognize how precious life is and how much we have responsibility to protect others. And if there's a possibility of danger of any type, then we also have to factor that in. And that very delicate balance is a part of what we strive for as we ask for zchus during the Aser Yemei Tshuva. So you should have a meaningful, inspiring fast. But as Hashem, again, tomorrow we'll have it in person and Zoom option as we discuss Parsha Vayelech and possibly more, time permitting, and hopefully we will see much to learn from in that perspective as well. All right, should be a very meaningful and uplifting time.